Hi, and welcome to episode 10 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars and Stalkerville, and joining me to dive headfirst into the mind-altering world of small press comics are writer, artist, and creator of the ongoing superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello there.
And the man who pulled Excalibur from the stone and then sold it so he could buy more issues of the Golden Age Bunty. It's Tony Esmond.
All right.
Oh, I was really proud of that when I wrote that.
That was a good one, actually. Yeah, it's quite good. Thanks. I'm almost forgiving you now for saying that John Bon Jovi's performance in Vampires 2 was rubbish.
Did you even say you'd seen it, Vince?
I've seen bits of it, but...
you've seen it.
It made me sick. Anyway, I hope everyone's got a drink in their hands, because this week we're celebrating making it to double figures. It's a miracle. Yay! We made it to episode 10, and we haven't ostracised the entire comic book community, upset our guests, or been sued. Give it another couple more weeks, though, and we'll probably separate due to creative differences. That's what bands do these days, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Who's Zayn out of 1D? Who's going to leave first?
Who's that?
Oh,
Robbie out of Take That. You know that. Okay.
You got to work further back to bring Tony into it.
Anything like pre-1972, it's fine.
You got me.
Hey, come on, it's gone off the rails.
Anyway, enough guff about us three. It's time to introduce this week's special guest. She's a comic book writer whose credits include such titles as Albion, Sherlock Holmes, Black Shuck, and the current Deja Thoris Irene Adler Swords of Sorrow miniseries for Dynamite. And as well as the physical comic book work, she's also one of the brain trusts responsible for the recently launched Electra Comics, a digital comics reader app featuring content by some of the best writers and artists in the business. So, it's our great pleasure to welcome Leah Moore to the show. Hello, Leah.
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
Hey, Leah, you're right.
Leah.
Hello.
Was that a satisfactory intro?
Definitely, yeah. It's like a wrestler's info. I feel like I should come in like a satin dressing gown, you know.
Oh, you've been on the show before then, obviously.
Yeah.
I like that. That is what it sounds like. I didn't realise, apart from my ones, obviously.
Well,
you've got to throw Vince for a trestle table, and you're really good.
We may get to that point.
Probably will. It's happened before. We'll be finding out more about Leah's work, processes, and getting all the details about the exciting new Electra Comics app in just a moment. And there's going to be plenty of talk and learn about, especially for a techno-allergic person like Tony. But before we do that, it's that time of the show where I call out into the air. How are we all, folks, and what have we been reading, doing, and generally getting excited about? Lord Esmond?
Yeah, I've been all right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to talk a little bit about something I went to this week. I went to like a...
Roller disco?
Sorry, mate?
Was it a roller disco?
Yeah, that was at the weekend. I DJed. It was a poetry and comics event, which I'll talk about in a minute. But otherwise, it's been all right, yeah. Somebody keeps photoshopping Steven Seagal's face onto me on Facebook.
I don't know what you mean.
It's been all right.
Slander. That's absolute slander, Tony.
How you been, Dan? You all right?
Yeah, all good. All good. Yeah, so... Are we breaking with the usual format?
Every week he never comes out with anything. Every week he just says, I'm right.
So as soon as someone asks me what I'm doing, the shields come up. So, fine. Yeah. How are you?
Unless something's gone horribly wrong, like his smoke alarm's gone off in the middle of the night. Then he gets a bit pokey.
Always ready to moan. No, I've been really kind of on the ball, kind of creative-wise. I've been doing a lot of things for a lot of people, drawings and colouring and blah, 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 blah. So that's been going well. Okay. I finished off my piece for Chris Imber. I've done a piece for The Last Sheriff, and he's going to do like an art trade and do one for Vanguard, hopefully.
Nice.
So, that's been going well. I was even looking into... Dobes mentioned it a couple of weeks ago about looking up colouring videos on YouTube. So I've kind of been... I've been hitting that, trying to kind of up my game a bit.
And what are they like? Have they been quite helpful?
Brilliant. Honestly, when... years ago when you like looked on YouTube and they kind of had the lower quality vids, now I can watch it on like the flat screen in the front room at high def, and I can see what the guy or girl in question is doing. Do you know what I mean? While they're talking you through it, because it's like you're working on a desktop, whereas before you're kind of looking at a blurry image. But it's really, really handy. I mean, there's such a great resource YouTube for kind of comics generally. Okay. It's well worth checking out.
All right, you have to send us some of the links. I'll put them on the show notes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, we'll do. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Tony, poetry. Come on, tell me about this poetry. Right, come on, let's get into it.
Because I don't know if you know this, Vince, but I'm prone to wearing a bit of corduroy occasionally. You know, maybe the old polo neck.
The pictures in my mind are just getting...
Yeah. Nice, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah.
And I went to a poetry and comics event this week at the Poetry Cafe. Have you ever been there, Vince? I guess probably, but I'm starting to ask.
Where's that?
It's in Covent Garden.
Okay.
22 Betterton Street, Covent Garden, in London.
Have you been there before? What kind of poetry is it?
It's just all different kinds of poetry. But what they've done is they've done like an event. So they've done a book, which is they've sort of part financed through the Arts Council about basically joining the two mediums of poetry and comics together. So they produced a sort of a trade paperback, a small sort of trade paperback, which the first half tries to explain the history of poetry comics, because that has happened before, you know, there's been the history of it over the years. And it includes bits of Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud and all this sort of thing, you know. And it goes into the comparisons of, and the pacing of comics and the pacing of poetry. But it doesn't, and it includes some names that I knew. Tim Bird, which is a picture I posted. I sent you it, actually, Vince, this week, didn't I? Do you remember?
Yes.
Do you remember what the poem was called?
No.
Called Night Bus.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, you're bringing up... Yeah, go on.
Yeah, your bus love again.
That's not bus love. Oh,
but love on a bus, how's that?
That's hate.
Yeah, that'll be the name of my new album.
Oh, yeah. And Sea of Faces, which is by a lady called Anna Saunders, who's quite well known in the sort of small press scene. And it's basically half a sort of text piece book and half it is poetry with images behind it. It's a strange mix. I mean, one of the stories I found quite strange... by Connor Steckschult, All Problems Are the Same Problem, which is in a book called Over the Line, An Introduction to Poetry Comics, doesn't actually have any words in it, which I thought was a bit strange. I don't know. I don't know whether that works for me. It might work for other people. I don't know. I don't understand everything. But to me, poetry's got a certain motion to it. It's got a certain sort of pace to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So when you're reading a poem, you know, some people, we all read poems, if it was just at school, we've all read something or other. Mm. And it's got a sort of a pace to it, but this didn't seem to have the same, while I'm trying to read a poem, I'm also trying to sort of, I don't know, drink in the image. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And you have to go back and look at the images after you've read the poem almost. I mean, it's an interesting experiment, and it's certainly by no means a failure. I really enjoyed it. But there's some that are more successful than others. And I have to say... Tim Bird's Night Bus was brilliant. It's a poem about where the bus stops, so it has a motion to it as well, which matches the images in the comic. But it's something that I'll probably revisit. There's an exhibition as well, which the exhibition is pages from the book torn out and put on the wall, which I think I'd rather have seen the original art, or maybe if you did it digitally, the art blown up to a bigger size, you know, on the walls of the cafe. But you can see it's on till October. It's at the Poetry Cafe, 22 Betterton Street, as I said already. The book is produced by Sidekick Books, and you can get it from www.sidekickbooks.com, or you can pop in the Poetry Cafe and buy a copy. I think because I was at the launch, it was £12, but I think generally it's going to cost you £15. To buy. It's interesting. I wouldn't say it's 100% successful, but parts of it are quite beautiful and you know, obviously well written and obviously well drawn. But yeah, it's an intriguing experiment. I'm going to put it that way. Yeah, there you go.
It's intriguing because the two kind of have got their own framework and style of working. So trying to mesh them, I'd imagine that would be difficult at times.
Yeah, that and that's
as that book illustrates.
Yeah. I enjoyed it and they were nice people, but yeah.
How did you find out about an event like this?
I can't remember how I found out about this one.
Wandering the streets at night.
Yeah, you know, wandering, going to sort of dark poetry clubs.
Nice.
I don't know, I think I saw it on Twitter, or did the lady contact me? I can't remember. No, Chrissy Williams runs it. It's really nice. Yeah, super nice. And we had a chat about some poetry that had appeared in some Bronze Age books. If you read the last issue of Master of Kung Fu, there's a Zen poem on the last page which sums up the whole... you know, 100 and something pay, you know, issue run. You know, so it's not something that hasn't been done already. But it's something that they've got some funding and done this book, and anyone who produces comics by me is a good egg. And a lot of it is very good. You know, so there you go.
Cool. Awesome.
Oh, lovely. Dan, have you been reading anything? I know you've been busy, but...
I forgot to mention, during the week, I looked into starting up a comic convention, maybe quite foolhardily.
You are mental.
I think maybe I kind of go a bit lower key first, but kind of... I used to live near Croydon, and that's like a massive place. Like, I can't understand why that doesn't have one, and it could serve most of the kind of the south, southeast, southwest.
Yeah,
it just seems idiotic not to kind of have one there. So I've been asking around for that.
Not there, I think it's got it manages a couple of comic shops, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I mean when you got East Croydon there, that's kind of like you're 20 minutes, you're at London Bridge. 40 minutes here at Brighton is kind of, I'd have thought it would kind of bring a big crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the kind of pie in the sky talk. That's what it is at the moment. But yeah, I'm interested into looking, if anyone's got any kind of tips on how to kind of even think about starting that kind of stuff up, if you give us a shout on Facebook. I'm not saying I'm going to be able to do it, but it's certainly something I'm going to start looking into.
I've got a contact who knows the lady who played E.T.'s finger.
Get them along. That could help bring the crowds in.
You got to get the names in, haven't you? That's the main thing.
Maybe get John Bon Jovi in.
Yeah. Well, you know, I said the names. You know, he's not as good as, he's not living on a prayer anymore, is he?
He's not that like 1D. I don't know who he is.
Vince?
1D isn't a person, Tony. It's a it's a band. Oh God,
it's
I can't believe I know that, and I'm talking about it. Right, let's change the subject.
Get on the bus.
Get on the bus. obviously, yesterday I was at ICE Expo in Birmingham. Good little show that it was. It was certainly interesting in many different ways. The Red Mask did all right. I was sharing a table with we've previously mentioned him, Sean Dobes, and his Descending Outlands.
Not that bloke.
Yeah, I know, he gets everywhere, doesn't he? It's like a bad, like a bad smell. Febreze won't even get out. It was a fun day. It was an oddly sort of ebbs and flows, as it were. I was on the small press sort of floor. There was three floors. It was one building that was separated into three floors. And at the end of the room there was like John Wagner, Phil Winslade, Declan Shalvey. I've forgotten there was a couple of others. So there was a signing sort of table section at the back. And I experienced this at Thought Bubble a bit last year, that when I was in the tent, that there's a lot of people milling about looking for the signatures and stuff, but it doesn't necessarily translate into people visiting your table. You know, it's really busy, but it's almost not as busy in terms of sales and things like that. But saying that, met some lovely people. They came up, checked out the book, picked up some books, sold some more Stalkerville books, which are good. A lot of people had good words to say about their podcast as well.
That's cool, isn't it?
Quite nice. I bumped into a few creators, like Tom Ward, our friend of the show, Tom Ward, Merrick the Elephant Man.
He's
popped up.
Kickstarter going, hasn't he?
He's got a Kickstarter going.
Third biggest Kickstarter in comics, he was telling me, or something, wasn't he?
What?
It's the third biggest comic Kickstarter at the moment, isn't it?
Oh, the Merrick one, or his new one.
Oh, I'm not sure. No, maybe that is then. Yeah, I don't know. Forget I said that then. Yeah.
All right, yeah.
I just saw he put loads of pictures of burgers up or something on Facebook, didn't he?
There's a little story behind it. I was at the show, and my girlfriend was at the show, and she popped off and got some lunch. She got Five Guys. Have you ever eaten Five Guys burgers?
No, I'm a veggie, aren't I?
Tony. Let's just ignore Tony. Dan, have you ever?
Very
Leah, have you ever eaten Five Guy burgers?
I'm veggie too, I'm afraid.
Oh, God. Right. Well, this story's fantastic, and I'm just going to leave it at
that. Yeah, it's going really well, this story.
Yeah. Well, basically, like, she brought a burger back, and Tom lit up like a Christmas tree as soon as he saw it, so he was posting about burgers and etc.
Right.
Anyway, that got completely off topic. I bumped into Tom Ward from Merrick the Elephant Man, who also said that some people came up and bought some of his books after listening to the show, which is brilliant, because that's exactly what we want this show to do. People to discover new books that they don't know about before, and then check out these creators and meet them face to face, because they're all lovely people. It's only us three that host this show that are horrible. Especially Tony. And I also met Chris Welsh from Wart, the comic, who had a successful Kickstarter. Sarah Millman from The Heart of Time, bumped into her. Mike Garley and Josh Sherwell from the Kill Screen.
I hate them.
he was there, pleasant as always. I was sat next to Andy Bloor from Midnight Man,
Oh, no, Andy Bloor might lead into our conversation with you, I think, Leah.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Andy Bloor is a lovely man. He's a legend.
Oh, a legend, do you hear
that, Andy?
Yeah, look at that.
He's a softly spoken legend as well. He's like, you know.
That's the best sword.
Yeah. so true. Like Dan Butcher. I won't say Tony Esmond because...
Who's that, Guns McVanguard?
I thought you called him Guns McBanger then.
I was totally jealous of that picture you posted up from Andy, Vince.
Yeah, Andy was doodling a bit at his table. He did like this Judge Dredd picture, which was absolutely amazing. I took a little picture over his shoulder, which was quite cheeky. I did tell him that I was doing it as well. So I'll post that up on the Facebook. But towards the end of the day, he just started drawing a picture of the Red Mask and then gave it to me at the end. He goes, "Here you go, mate." And then like my jaw sort of dropped and I was like, "Oh, God."
It
was brilliant. At the same time, I hated him because it was far better than anything I could do.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was really good.
Yeah,
I've got a page of Andy's. He's absolutely stunning, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got a portfolio. It's an interesting story. If you see Andy Bloor at a show, check out the portfolio he's got because his artwork and the blacks and the line work and everything is just so. So you've got a page of some of his work, have you, Leah?
Yeah, well, we're very, very lucky in that we got to do a little story with him for, I think it was for Accent UK, for their Robots anthology. And he gave us a page from that. And it's just, like you say, he's blacks. I was discussing with somebody the other day how a page of very nice, inky comic art can actually make you salivate slightly. But I think Andy Bloor is the perfect excuse of that, like the perfect example of that, which is just...
You're absolutely right. Because like
his blacks are immense.
Yeah, looking at his... He's got a real sort of clean work as well. Like he works to like A3, but his sort of... His control over the blacks, like there's straight ruler lines, you know what I mean? Like when it's going off the page, when it bleeds off the page, I'm not always concerned about how the black's going to be because I'm going to crop it in Photoshop, etc. But he's got such a sort of mastery over that black and his lines. And he's so softly spoken, he's like, "Yeah, it's all right, I'm all right." And I'm looking at it going, "You make me sick. You make me... This is amazing."
How to win friends and influence people. Yeah.
One guy came up to him and looked through his portfolio of this, the Midnight Man pages, had all his Midnight Man pages.
That's a great book, yeah.
And he said, "How much for the lot?"
Really?
Andy by surprise. He's like, "What?" Because he didn't expect it, you know. And he sells like his original pages, I think, for £30 a page.
That's cheap.
He is underselling himself massively. Yeah. When you see these pages, I already picked out two that I want from Midnight Man. But he didn't expect it. So I think he's been in contact. The guy walked away with one page, which Andy was made up about because he hasn't sold an original page at a con before. I don't know how well those sort of things go at cons in the small press sort of arena, original artwork. Do you know many people who sell a lot of the original artwork in the small press section?
Not overly.
You don't see a lot of people doing it.
A couple of weeks ago by David Broughton, didn't I? And he was selling a few pages from Martillo. But not often. You don't see it that often anymore. I suppose so many people work digitally now as well, don't they? You know?
Yeah, yeah. But, Andy's stuff is just beautiful. So when he gave me the Red Mask sort of piece at the end.
Superb, mate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice one.
It helps when you're nice to people.
Does it?
You should learn that, Tony.
Yeah, I'll have a go at that.
No, Tony Esmond, loveliest man in comics.
Thank you.
Don't believe what everyone else says. I also bumped in Chris Imber, the Reckless Hero guys. They were there.
Okay.
Yeah, it's great catching up with them. The Hellbound Media guys, who I always see at a show, and Chris Sides of Redshift Press.
Yeah, he's a good guy, isn't he?
It was lovely.
I think I'm having a coffee with him next week, actually. We're meeting up next Saturday. He's a good lad.
Yeah, he was a very nice chap. He's learned things from this show. Can you believe that? apparently, you know, we help people.
No, I don't like that.
I'm taking notes while you're...
Thank you.
That's why I'm so quiet. I'm just...
Yep. It's just a pad sort of saying, "Don't ever do this again. Yeah. Don't ever do this again. Don't ever do this again."
I do drawings while we're on air sometimes, Leah, as well.
I, I'll probably show them afterwards. It'll be fine.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah, so, no, it was a great little show. I managed to get and see the Avery Hill publishing people for the first time. Nice. Yeah. I know Tony's picked them up a few times, and I will hold my hands up and be honest right now, for the first time in my life. No, that before this show started, I hadn't bought or checked out any Avery Hill books, purely because they weren't in, you know, they weren't close to hand, they weren't in my local comic book shop or something like that. But after, like Tony was mentioning some books, you know, I went on their website, checked out some stuff. And of course, we had Rachel Smith last week talking about the rabbit. So
that's
yeah, and Kat, who was lovely. Now we're gonna get her back on. So it was they were the first one on my list. I had to go and get these books. I wanted to get my signed copy of the rabbit. Thank you very much, Rachel, for signing my copy of the rabbit. And while I was there, I picked up another couple of books, which I saw online, which was hilarious. The Manly Boys Annual and the Comely Girls Annual. They're little A5 books, and they are by Steve Tillotson and Gareth Brooks.
Yeah.
Have you got both of these, Tony?
I have, mate. Steve and Gareth are both ex-table mates of mine, and they're hilarious. Yeah, no. I mean, I think I bought Gareth a comic called Superman and Super Horse once, which we sort of found funny. but yeah, they are top. They're top guys. They've been doing some great work for years and years and years. Mm. You know, both award-winning, you know, creators in their own right. You know, away from Avery Hill.
Yeah.
But yeah, good guys, both of them, and really funny too. If you ever mix with them, I've got an album by Gareth put out an album.
What, like an audio album?
Yeah, with a comic, and it had I can't really say the name. Well, I think one of the stories was called "Retard Dad" or something. One of the songs. Mm. But which my son has now got on his iPad and on his iPod and he plays it all the time. So my son was over the moon when he met him at a signing about a year ago. I went, "This is a bloke who does that song called Fat Baby or something," and he went, "Oh yeah, I love that." So no, really funny guys. Yeah, good and great artists as well. Really good.
Yeah, these two books, they're like how would you describe them? They're like 28 pages, black and white.
Yeah,
and they're different sort of. They're done in the style of those old sort of. Like kids' annuals, aren't they, really?
Yeah, but from like the 40s.
Yeah, from the 40s. You know? Yeah. So there's some poems, there's some strips, but they're all like real dark humour, a real sort of like... the black comedy is rife throughout. And both of them, like... Makeup tips for thrifty girls is one of the pages. And for instance, eyeliner. Make your eyes sparkle with a dramatic black outline. Use Indian ink instead of the expensive eyeliner. It works just as well. Apply with a fountain pen for an accurate finish. You know, and it's full of like little, you know, these little tips and how to care for your baby. And the baby's got like a top hat and smoking a pipe over the two pages. Ricky from Avery Hill, when he pulled the books out, because he had them behind the table, he said, "These are the two funniest pages you will see all year." And it's two pages of a strip of girls playing a match of hockey.
Oh, the hockey, yeah.
St. Williams plays up. Now, I'm going to keep this podcast as clean as I possibly can. and the strip starts out, "It's a big day for the girls of St. Williams. They're playing the girls of St. Andrews on the Vicarage Green." And then the first panel, this is all I'm going to say about this strip, but... There's a girl just saying, "Judy, you slag, we're going to tear your fucking hair out for tossing Rob off at the village fete." And the rest of the strip goes on from there. And it had me in absolute stitches. I highly recommend.
That sounds quality.
Yeah,
it's good.
They're £4 each. You can get them from the Avery Hill website. They're £4 each and you can get both of them for £7. And it wasn't even, you know, I'd already looked at one page. You can see a preview of a couple of pages on their website. So I highly recommend you do that. Because as soon as I saw that, I thought, this is the sort of thing that I'd probably find funny. And it was so much more than that. It was so much more than that. So, the Manly Boys Annual and Comely Girls Annual, I recommend that. I've just got back from the con, so I haven't had a chance to read everything that I bought. But I had to get on them straight away. So that's what I've been doing.
Nice one.
So that was us three. Leah, what about me?
What have I been doing? Well, in between the project management, I don't actually get a chance to sort of get out and see sunshine or oxygen or any of that kind of normal stuff. So it's whatever I can get kind of down the internet tubes. But I've got a Patreon. I support only a couple of people so far on Patreon. And one of them is Al Davison's Muscle Memory. Now, I'm sure you've probably you've probably all heard of it. I hadn't actually. I'd read Spiral Cage, and I'd read sort of seen all of, you know, a lot of his other work, but I've basically the Patreon thing is I've been reading it. It's a page at a time, which you know, like comics, you know, everybody says, oh, you know, nobody's got the patience for monthly comics anymore, or weekly, you know, right. You know, weekly comics, but getting something one page at a time is about as, like, I'm like, I actually just sit there with my fingers all stuffed into my mouth between months, just like what, please God, another page. And the thing is, I don't know if any of your listeners are, hopefully some of them have yet to discover it, but it's what should be a totally harrowing, awful thing to read. It's about his kind of his being born, and then the doctor saying that he had very little chance of living, and about his horrible abusive father, and just this life story that you just kind of, it makes your jaw drop and you just think, how, what? But do you know, as I'm reading it a page at a time, and every single time I get the little thing saying, oh, a new page has been added, I have to go and read it right then, because the hero of the story is Al himself. It's autobiographical, so you know he's him, and he's doing, he's drawing it, so you know he's fine, so it's okay. But the hero of the story is a baby so far. I'm only on page 78 or something. The hero of the story is a baby, and then a toddler, and then, like, and I've got 2 3-year-olds and a 5-year-old, and I know, you know, that they're not as soft as they like to make out they are, but Al is, like, it's absolutely staggering, the kind of, I think, if you're into any kind of comic, if you're into sort of, like, you know, bizarre fantasy comics, or, you know, any kind of comic, a construction of just the compelling nature of it, I find absolutely, it's actually a really,
he's probably an incredible artist as well, isn't he? He's
an amazing artist. Yeah. He can do, like, any style at all, and he kind of with this, he does a mixture of all of them. He does some of them, you know, really painted. He does all these different styles, and I'm quite a wuss when it comes to you know, I have to switch over the news, or I have to, like, I get kind of like, oh no, I can't really cope with this, I can't really cope. But actually, like, because Al's book is about him, and because it's this toddler versus the universe kind of thing, and you're just like, by the end of it, you're just like, yeah, I can't wait to see what he's going to do when he's 7. Do you know what I mean? He's just going to be kicking everybody's ass and memorizing novels and writing amazing things and doing. He's sort of like tiny baby superhero, but real. Right. So yeah, that's my,
I must check that out.
Top recommendation.
Yeah, you see him at a lot of conventions. He's a really great guy to chat to as well. I think London Super Comic Con I last saw him. And he's been pumping out great work for years and years and years, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, he's really interesting stuff. Yeah.
So what, he updates on his Patreon account? Like,
every time he's already did Muscle Memory, but he's recoloring it and relettering it, so it's looking extra gorgeous, and he puts loads of other stuff up there, you know, process stuff and all kinds. But no, he's a lovely, lovely chap, and I always stop and say hello. But he's
Patreon's interesting. I've been writing a piece on it for Down the Tubes at the moment, and there's some people who really run with it and really treat it, you know, professionally, and do some great work on there. And there's some people who just seem to sort of sign up for it and nothing ever happens. You know, it's really nice to see someone doing something properly with it, you know, and treating it as it should be, you know.
And you definitely know that kind of, you know, whatever you support him, it's just him. Do you know what I mean? He's just sat there, he's doing the pages, and he's like, you know, it's really good. And I'm a big fan of exploring new markets, as I'm sure we'll get into later. But I think, you know, new different models, and different, even if not any one of them particularly is completely perfect for everybody, then I think it's good to see if there's, have a crack at, you know.
Yeah, it's such an expanding area, that, you know, the world of comics now. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. So you read a lot of comics digitally then, you would say?
Is that, I, is that... but, For the aforementioned crazy shut-in lady with, transparent-looking skin and, sitting in my dressing gown. So, yeah, when I actually do get out, I get a bit, fevered. If I actually get near paper comics and graphic novels, I have to have that. I've seen other people, pictures of other people. But I'm trying to think what the last actual proper... paper comics. I'm fiercely addicted to Wicked and Divine, but I think what else have I been reading? I'm trying to think.
Well, you're quite busy though, so
I am quite busy. That's my main excuse, is that I am quite busy.
Plus you're writing about 8 books at the same time, aren't you, as well?
Do you know what, at the moment I'm John is in the middle of working up a pitch for our next 2000 AD thing, so we're not in the middle of a heavy scripting bit, but the pitching bit is harder, I think. You've got to actually think it up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's probably good that you're not writing lots of things, because and watch this segue, because you're...
oh, no.
Here we go. because you're working a lot on the Electra comics, aren't you, stuff at the moment. Now, for all you people out there that haven't heard about it, Electra Comics is a digital comics reader app which gives you free access to innovative digital comics by some of the best writers and artists in the business, which I said earlier as well. So it's not as if this is all coming out of my head. I haven't got this written down, I swear.
Obviously. You say it really nicely as well.
Yeah, he's got a lovely voice.
Mellifluous.
Yeah. I'm like Audio Horlicks. That's what I am.
Audio what?
Horlicks. Have you never drunk Horlicks? Oh my God. I've just turned into a 70-year-old man on air.
Last week we were talking about a Radio 4 radio show you wanted to be on.
Now, there's some mention of how nice buses were earlier as well.
Oh my God.
Is there going to be a segment later about slippers, do you think?
Yeah.
All right, Leah, we've got you as a guest. All right, I don't want you to join in the character assassination.
One of those big slippers for 2 feet that are heated. Maybe.
Just a sleeping bag, isn't it?
that's going on the Facebook page. You can find it then.
Patricia on Vince's Christmas list. If he hasn't seen already.
Oh, God. Anyway, Electra Comics.
Yes.
Right. Normally at this point in the show, I say to someone, you know, your small press book, pitch it to us. Electra Comics is going to work in a different way this time. Electra Comics, tell us all about it.
Electra Comics is a project that has taken, it's been 18 months or more in the making, and it's a digital research and development project that is funded by Nesta and the Arts Council, and it's basically digital funding for the arts, and it was something that we put in for because my dear old dad, who is Alan Moore, as I assume most people know, he had an idea in one of his short film projects that he's been working on. There was a character in the background who was reading a digital comic on a transparent scroll, and he just threw it in just for like something cool in the background, how he tends to. And then he said, oh, it'd be really cool if we could actually have that be a real digital comic, because they've written all the songs for the films and got people to perform them. They're not using anybody else's work in it. You know, they're doing every bit of media that you see in their films they've actually made. So, like, if there's a cartoon on, somebody's had to make the cartoon. So they're just being kind of thorough, I think, but in a really insane and totally pointless way. So they said, oh, it'd be good if we could have a digital comic that was actually real. And then Mitch went off and talked to somebody, and Pete went off to talk to somebody, and Pete bumped into his friend at the school gates, who happened to be an app developer, and he said, why don't you go for this fund? It's got so we actually sat and thought about what we wanted to do, and we were thinking digital comics. They got me in because I'd recently finished the Thrill Electric, which is another digital comic for Channel 4 Education that me and John did, which is about a telegraph office in the 1890s, and it's kind of basically the Victorian internet kind of thing. So they thought, Leah knows what digital comics are about, so we'll get her down to sort of consult on it. And we put this application into the Arts Fund, and it was basically, we want to see if we can make some amazing digital comics, but also we want to try and make it so that so that there is the ability for other people to do the same thing, because we thought it's not really enough to just go, oh, look, we've done this cool thing, because we knew that we only had a limited pot of money. We knew that it was just this funding, and but we wanted to make sure that the funding, basically, that we got our money's worth out of it, that we got as much kind of value out. So we thought if we do an app and make it so that people can publish their own digital comics on it. And it's kind of, it grew and changed shape over the course of the project. So, it's been...
So you got some big names kind of releasing content purely on that, haven't you? I was reading.
The ones that we've got is, me and John did a story with Nicola Scott on the art, which to be honest, it's cheating a bit because I was also editing it. So I was like, who can we get to do it? It would be amazing. And we asked Nicola Scott and she said yes. And straight away she just said yes. And I was just like, oh, if I'd known it was that easy. Do you know what I mean? It's like the nerves you get is sort of like dating nerves. And I was like really sweating, typing this email going like, would you like to maybe draw our comic? And then she was like, yay. So... we've got Garth Ennis who did Red Horse for us, and
that's lovely. I read that yesterday.
Isn't really it nice. Beautiful?
Yeah, incredible. Yeah,
he's and I loved having Garth on it because, like, my dad is famously kind of an irascible old technophobe who, like, despises all things kind of modern, and you know, he doesn't have digital telly. He doesn't have the internet. He doesn't have a mobile phone. Betamax would be a bit advanced for him, I think. So, like, I was kind of... but then we got Garth, and we said to Garth, like, we basically, you know, he's lives over in America, so we just sort of email him back and forth, and I said, oh, you know, giving him my big spiel and saying we really want to, like, push comics in, you know, in a digital native kind of, you know, making the narrative work only in digital, make it so that, you know, that it's something that is pure digital that, you know, you couldn't enjoy if it was paper. And I got this very polite email back saying, well, I've got some ideas for a story, so I'll just go with that and see what you think of it. And I was like, oh, okay then. And I got the script back and I was just like, it's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful story. And I was like, but how were you thinking we would address the digital aspects of it? And he's like, well, I don't know, because I really hate all that kind of bells and whistles stuff where you just kind of add stuff on for no reason. And I was like, yeah, me too. Yeah, okay. So maybe something quite subtle. And he's like, yeah, I suppose, yeah, you could do something quite subtle. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what exactly you would... well, it seems to sort of spoil it, really. I don't know. You have a think about it. And so I went off and had a think about it. And I was just, like, looking at it and thinking, oh, it is literally going to be me attaching bells and whistles to it. It really is. I'm going to be going, and then this thing, like, springs up at you, and it's going to be ridiculous. So we just thought, do you know what? We're going to do four stories with four different kind of ways of reading them, four different genres, four different styles. I thought, what if Garth's is the one that is... It's an infinite canvas one, because it just scrolls and scrolls and scrolls. But I thought, you know, it's a valid... But I love it. I think there's no more contrary thing than asking a lot of irascible, dyed-in-the-wool comic creators to go, why don't you try something crazy and new? And they're all just, yeah, probably not, actually. he's fantastic. We got him and Frank Victoria. Originally, we had Peter Snaberg, but he had to drop out due to the scheduling problems. So we ended up with Frank Victoria, who previous to that was doing concept art for The Hobbit. He was living in New Zealand drawing Hobbity stuff. Cool. So we were just
I find sort of digital comics are still finding their feet, as in what the kind of next stage they're kind of morphing into. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of kind of options on the table, and some of them are really successful. Some kind of like merge like a bit of animation with a bit of music. I'm not sure if that really works or not really. Sometimes it's great. It's still kind of evolving. So it's interesting as far as that goes. I've kind of looked into Electric Comics. So anyone can kind of put stuff forward for it. Is that right? Or you kind of quality control it, or
do you know what? No, it's going to be the creator tool is probably going to go live, if not tomorrow, then Tuesday. It's quite a basic tool at the moment, just because of the engineering time. We had kind of a load of galley slaves coding it for us, and they were all working so hard on our comics and the app that we kind of didn't have the time to really. Basically, it's not a big Adobe suite of image manipulation tools, but it allows you to put your artwork in, to rearrange it and have it so that you can do it panel delivery where it comes up a bit at a time and you can control that, or you can do infinite canvas comics, you can do a big, you know, enormous side scroller, or, you know, sort of one where you have to follow the panels around in a funny way. And then it will spit out a nice little file that is readable in the app, so you can host it yourself and just put the link up on social media, and if people have got the app, it will auto load and they'll be able to keep it and read it and share it and what have you.
Oh, nice.
So it's kind of direct digital self-publishing without any hosting by us or quality control or anything. So if anybody makes anything appalling on it, it's not our fault.
that's a disclaimer. Yeah.
First disclaimer.
Is that your long eyelid on it? Is it? It's going to be this huge library of comics that's accessible by everyone. Is that the sort of view on it?
I would like it if the Electro Comics-ness of itself ended up almost invisible. I know that people online, since we've launched, I've had two sort of standard replies back from the universe. One of which is, when is it going to be available on Android? Which 6,000 billion people have said. And basically, as soon as we get secondary funding is the answer. And the other one is, when can we just have the web version so we can, like, embed it in our own websites and what have you. Okay. So, and that is definitely something that we did talk about earlier on in the process. And so that, you know.
I mean, I guess the launching of this is an ongoing adventure anyway, isn't it? Because you launch the first, this is the first stage of it, isn't it? And then there's going to be more things going, you know, Electro Comics is going to evolve as everything else.
Yeah, and we really want people to chip in as well. So we did quite a lot of beta testing and user testing. We're hoping, because we've made it open source, so people can get the code and poke it about and change it and improve on it. So if people want to add functionality themselves and say, look, you know, you could do this so much better if you just had that in it, then we'll actually be able to say okay and accept that and add it into the main version. So we're hoping that if there's enough of an interest in it, because it's open source and because it's free, and, you know, we have no plans to start, you know, monetizing it crazily, because we're not allowed to, basically, because it's a government grant that we're, you know, we'd have to give them all their money back. So we're basically kind of giving it to people to see what they can do with it, see what comics they can do, see if they can do anything with the software, and just see if it's a useful thing for the comics creating community. Then, you know, hopefully that will prove itself, kind of thing. So
because that's essentially it's built for small press, isn't it?
Yes,
that's brilliant. Yeah,
it's almost like a museum. It's almost like a sort of place you can go for free and view, you know, untold amount of comics. It's a really good idea, yeah.
I would say it's almost like a library rather than a museum.
Okay. Yeah. Gallery.
It's not going to be dusty old comics here, Tony Esmond. Come on.
Oh, my comic room.
No, do you know, it? You could use it. You could sit down with your busy tablet and draw something amazing and put it up, and it would be completely. I'm hoping to get some of the guys that are doing GIF comics to give it a try once we've got the creator tool done, because I think that there's a lot of really amazing comics done with GIFs, like Boulay, who did R Toyota, was fantastic. That there's a Atelier Capsule that do GIF comic workshops that are kind of halfway between animation and comics. So I want people to do whizzy futuristic things on it, but like you say, it is really perfect for small press, because what we said all the way through the meetings was that anybody can do themselves a little zine and sell it at a convention for £2. Anybody can print it off, staple it. I have a long arm stapler, and it is one of my proudest possessions. Also a good chance weapon. I think what we wanted to do was make something that was the digital equivalent of that. So it's not something fancy that's, you know, it's not a, it's just something that is accessible, available, and that basically anybody who wants to have a go at making a comic can have a go on it, and it's not going to be mind-bogglingly difficult to do, and it publishes very quickly and easily, and people can read it quickly and easily, providing, of course, they have an iPad. So, yes.
Yeah, at the moment.
At the moment.
No, I read Load last night, and I have to say, Colleen Duran's Big Nemo art is just breathtaking. Incredible.
The two we haven't talked about, actually. So you've got four titles that have launched with the app. So Red Horse by Garth Ennis and Frank Victoria. You've got Sway by your good self, John Repium, and Nicholas Scott. And there's Second Sight by Peter Hogan.
Yeah.
And drawn by Paul Davison. Can you tell us a bit about that one as well?
Second Sight is amazing. Basically, we gave Pete the horror one. We thought, get him to do a horror one, and we were thinking we could do it like a sort of like the old EC titles where you get a load of little stories, and so we said it's a little 8-page story, so just do something that's like creepy and horrible and weird, but that does it somehow digitally. And he's done this brilliant one where you can read it in several different ways. There's no order to the pages. His script had page A and page B, but he said even that's too linear, they shouldn't be. you can read it, you click on little clues, and you can kind of navigate through it, and the reader builds up what has actually happened from the pages, whatever order you read it in, you still build up the same picture. And there's elements of animation, and there's it's really good. I was really impressed because he came down to one of our first meetings that we had, where we got Daniel Merlin Goodbury, who's our brain on the digital comics front, and he gave us kind of a potted history of digital comics. So every, you know, the sort of the progress through kind of the last decade or so on digital comics, and Pete was there, and I think him and my dad were both really concentrating hard when he was talking, and they both came back with stories that properly kind of went, oh, okay, so, and then really took the ball and ran with it, kind of thing. So yeah, Paul Davidson's art on it is superb. I was saying that was who I was saying it about the other day, about the delight of a British black and white page of comics. It's just something, it's that sort of 2000 AD thing we all grew up on, I think, but properly, nicely. Getting pages back from him was lovely. And
that's the one where you press it in certain places for clues and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's where the eye opens and closes. I like that page, and the phone rings and you press the phone
And it's been murder to code. I think bless them have absolutely been pulling their hair out over it. If this is the coal face of digital comics, then definitely we've got some dead canaries at a caster, I think, definitely. No, they're I love it because it is completely digital native. You know, you could kind of go turn to page 4 if you pick the radio, but I just think it's fun, and it's as long as your iPad can load it nice and quickly, then it's absolutely fine. So yeah,
it's like a find your own adventure type thing, isn't it? Yeah. It's almost across with that horror.
The only problem is that you can't keep your fingers in the pages where you made the book in case you die, which I always did. Oh, you've been eaten by giant spiders again.
Oh yeah, me too. Yeah,
but there were some of those things with those books, like you just make any choice completely. There's no, it's like a non sequitur. You're like, oh, and then you're dead. You climb on the table, oh, you're dead. It's like, well, how was I supposed to know that was coming? There's no luck or skill there at all.
Yeah, and you've got to read like almost a whole page before you realise, well, that what was the point of that? I'm dead. Oh. that one sounds really good because it's a nice meeting of, like, you know, it's like I say, it's interactive and it's ultra using the technology, but at the same time, it's like an EC comic. You know, that's proper old school, isn't it? So the fourth one is Big Nemo.
Yes.
With Colleen Duran and some guy named Alan Moore. Is he a newcomer on the scene?
Well, we thought we'd give him a break, you know. I know him quite well personally, so I thought he seems quite kind of promising. Yeah. Let the little scamp have a try at this, I thought.
Give him a go, go on.
Yeah, and he's, I mean, it's been quite good, I think, you know, what he's done. But no, it's like Colleen's art on it. I have a newfound appreciation for all parts of comics, because it's the first time I've ever edited anything. I just stuck my hand up and said, I'll edit it. You know, I like comics. I'm a bit of a control freak. You know, I might be good at that. Like, so, yeah. And it turns out, hooray, yes. But getting back and forth with Colleen on it, and she was sort of, she sent me rough layouts and they look pretty good. And then she sent me some sort of sketchy stuff. Like, yeah, that looks great. And then she sent me an email that said, like, I've been trying to work out, she said she really, like, had the fear, because it's Winsor McKay, and you don't want to, you really, really don't want to mess up Winsor McKay pastiche, because it's just going to show, and it's like, you know, there's nowhere to hide in it. But she, bless her, she didn't, like, you know, kill me or anything. She had a go at it, and she said that she'd been trying to work out the perspective for the panels with the bed and the bedroom, and she said that she'd been working it out with, like, vanishing points and two-point perspective and all this kind of, all the usual kind of stuff that she uses for the rest of her comics, and she said, and it didn't work, she couldn't get it to work. And she said Winsor McKay eyeballed it, every single page of, like, you know, all of his amazing comics with people like growing and shrinking and flying, and he eyeballed the whole lot because he's just Winsor McKay. So she did an absolutely sterling job.
Yeah, the roller coaster page, incredible. I loved that page.
Did you see the pencils?
Yes, I did. I saw your partner John posted them today, I think.
Incredible. It's really incredible. Yeah, and I was every single page of that, when I got it through, I was just, like, you know, absolutely blown away. It was weird because as soon as we'd, because Electrocomics is basically, like, we're launching it now, but it feels like we've been launching it for a whole year, because when we first announced that we were doing it, then we did a load of press then. We've been kind of doing a little bit here and there as we go through. So, but I know that almost as soon as we announced, then there was about four or five little Nemo books all sprung up. There's some absolutely, like, I can't remember the varying titles of them, but I was like, oh, my God. This is terrible. This is like, oh, this is, you know, we're going to be completely unoriginal. I thought, no, it just means that this is that weird year that everybody did Nemo and nobody knows why. And that's like, you know, ours is just going to be slightly late.
Yeah, there was a big hardback came out, wasn't there? The huge hardback book of it, I think.
Yes, the big collection of the original.
Yeah, that was lovely.
There's also been a few of the reinventions of it as well. So, but I absolutely, Colleen has done a
incredible. Yeah. I spoke to you at Thought Bubble about it, I think.
Did you come over to the table?
Did. I took a picture for John Freeman's site. I don't know if you remember.
Yes, I do, yeah.
Yeah. Because I work with a lady, and she says, I know somebody who does comics. And I said, oh, right, who's that? Because, you know, I'm out of the comics closet at work, you know. And she said, "Is Paul Hogan? His name's Paul Hogan." And I thought, "Oh, did he finish Crocodile Dundee 4? I didn't know that.
If he has, you'd watch it.
I would watch it. I'd collect it. So I spoke to. I walked up to Pete at the convention and said, "I think we've got a mutual friend, Joe Steele. I work with her." And he went, "And obviously, his two worlds of meeting mums at the gates when he collects his kids, and having some sort of hairy comic fan walk up to him." It sort of collided, and he just stared at me and said, well, what are you going on about? And then he sort of realised. So, yeah, no, he's a real good writer. His Resident Alien book in Dark Horse, brilliant, loved it. Really good writer.
He's fantastic, and a lovely, lovely chap. Yeah, no, we were all a bit baffled, actually. We were all sat behind that table, and kind of everybody was coming over to buy the booklets and whatever and chat to us, and we were trying to kind of, we were there to sort of canvas opinion about digital comics and the market and what people hated and what they liked. And by the end of the day, I think we'd said so many words, you know, when people come over and you're just like, I have no more words left, I only have syllables, that's it. So if I manage to say hello to you coherently, then
no, you did, yeah, no, definitely, excellent. Yeah.
How was the research process then? Because digital comics, obviously, like it's learning and growing, you know, but it's already so wide. There's so many websites, so many apps, you know, and, you know, you're launching something new into it. What was that like, just researching it? And like you say, asking all this, was it just like an onslaught of information, or did you enjoy it?
No, I did enjoy it. No, it was fascinating. There was tons of stuff that I'd never seen. There was loads of stuff that I was like totally aware of but hadn't kind of seen how we'd apply any of that to what we were doing. Having Daniel on the team, he was basically what we kind of managed to pin down, the things that people, the things about paper comics that worked, the way that you can, what he and his colleague James call flippy throughiness, the being able to go back and forth in a comic and go, hang on, I didn't see that on that page. Oh, yes, I did. It's just there and kind of... you know, go back to your favourite pages or, you know, like you can, you've got a feeling in your hands of how big the whole thing is. Yeah. As you're reading a graphic novel, you can tell you're getting nearly to the end and it's a physical thing. Digital comics, you're just kind of sat there poking a screen like you do every day on Facebook or whatever, you know, you're just kind of, and I think we were trying to kind of nail down the, how to keep that sense of flippy throughiness in a digital comic. How do you maintain a feeling of the whole by, you know, how do you, and I think Red Horse is the one that does that best because it's just a single scroll, so you can you feel like you can go back and forth within that. It's one of those things. I think we tried to pinch some of the best kind of, you know, we tried to kind of go, if we can do that as good as that, but it's it was pretty daunting, to be honest, because there's some amazing stuff out there, and
a few people had a run at it recently, and I don't think have been, in my experience, has been as successful as this. I think of combining that sort of movement as well, isn't there? You know, I think part of it when you read a comic or you even read a novel or something, part of you thinks, "How much longer I got of this?" You know, I think that's almost part of it sometimes, isn't it?
Like some of the comiXology, like I read them. If it's comiXology, I read the guided view narrative sort of thing.
Yeah.
And which is quite cool. I quite like reading it like that. You know, it gives it a nice sort of pace, dramatic pace. But there's some comics you get a certain point, and then I sort of tap the top of the screen and see how many pages I got left.
Yeah.
And I think, Jesus, is this ever going to end?
But we do that with novels. We do that with these days. I look at the, you know, how much longer is this program left on TV? You know, we seem to sort of rush about and do everything, you know, at fast speeds these days, don't we? We don't seem to sort of spin.
I think with a paper graphic novel, you can just kind of, you know, throw a bookmark in and leave it, and then come back to it. And I think with digital, there is that kind of, if you can't bookmark it, or if you can bookmark it, but would you be bothered? Would you remember to? Because when you look at your screen, you're going to be doing a million other things, and it's kind of it is hard to kind of, and also I don't know, telly and film and stuff, you're happy, you invest in a film, don't you? You sit down, plonk yourself down in front of it, and just kind of let your eyes take it all in and what have you. But I think with comics, there's that interaction. You've got to actually build the story up from what you're seeing and what you're reading, and you've got to pay attention. So maybe it's the paying attention while it's leading you through it that is giving, I don't know if that's the thing that gives you jip. It might, like, it's there's something there that is with the guided view. We had guided view on electrical, on Thrill Electric, and there were bits you didn't have to have it, but I read it through with the guided view, and there were some times, like you say, where you're like, it's because it's so measured, it's because you're not controlling it just kind of goes dum 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 dum, and you kind of lose a bit of the I don't know.
It's not, I mean, I find if it's like an action issue, for instance, it'll give it a nice, speedy, dramatic, almost cinematic feel. But if you've got a real wordy issue, it can, sometimes it doesn't work so well because it's just, it really slows it down. Whereas, I find myself anyway. But I'm a simpleton.
Yeah. The world's changing though. I remember because I'd read so many sort of Western comics for so many years, I couldn't work out manga because my eye just didn't work properly. But, you know, but having sort of been the lover of the iPad now for a couple of years, I'm used to it now. I can negotiate a page that isn't the old style of, you know, left to right, you know, and all this sort of thing. I think we're learning slowly, aren't we, that it's all different. No,
and there's so many fantastic different takes on it. I mean, like, one of the things that, you know, when we first announced was Madefire was just announcing and was they'd bought out their creator thing, and I think they've done absolutely amazing stuff. I think they've really kind of they've pushed in a massive, massive way, and their stuff looks so beautiful and so kind of, it's so perfectly finished. I really think Electro Comics may, I mean, it looks beautiful, but I really feel like we're kind of the bumpkin cousins next to them, because everything looks so glossy. But, and I mean, you know, Comixology and Sequential, and they've got such enormous catalogues. That's the thing, like, I feel like a bumpkin cousin next to them as well, because they're, you know, we've got these 4 8-page comics, and I'm like, here, guys, hello, world, come browse our amazing selection.
Sequential started very small as well, didn't it? I mean, I remember dipping in and out of that for a long time and thinking, oh, there's nothing new on that. And I even closed the app down for a while, you know. Okay. And then they've grown and grown. I think, speaking of which, Avery Hill are on there now, I think. But I think that's the point of yours, is it's going to exponentially grow, is it not? Is that the plan, you know?
That's the plan, yeah. No, it really is. And, I mean, there's... I think that with digital, because people can kind of have a tinker about themselves, then I think I'm hoping that people can do some fun stuff with it. There's, you know, the one thing that has really come out of this is I've, you know, been in touch with loads of people in comics and in digital comics, and everybody's kind of seems to be of the same mind, which is that, like, you know, we're all pushing towards the same thing, which is just kind of more of this, please. Like, you know, more digital comics, you know, content is digital. None of us are debating that. We've all got phones, we've all got, you know, computers and tablets. So if everybody's digesting all this amazing content in other mediums, then we definitely want comics to be in there. So I think it's everybody's kind of a mind that, you know, if we all, it doesn't matter if we're approaching it in different ways.
There's no two ways
about
it.
It's all good, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I have to say, your four stories that you launched with all awesome. There's not a bad story there. I love them all, you know. And you can't say that of many anthologies, you know. So no. Definitely.
And we've read a few.
Yeah, we've read a few.
Yeah, I mean, Electro Comics feels like a real sort of embracing the community spirit, especially about the small press stuff. I mean, like it says on one of your press releases, take it, make with it, improve it, it's yours. And I think that sums it up. It's sort of like it's embracing. And this, I mean, the people that listen to this show and all the people you see in a small press, the community is massive and getting bigger every day. So for something like this to just sort of open its arms and just sort of say, let's make this, make something cool and make it better, you know, I think it sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And I've got an Android, so I'm prepared to wait.
We don't make any money out of this, do we, Vince and Dan? We've talked about this, you know, and for, you know, we do it for the love of it, and that's what this is at. This app, for me, it says, you know, put your comic out there, get people to read it, you know.
Yeah,
great. Yeah,
well, that's great. That's the lovely thing about comics, though, isn't it? It's a passionate kind of a culture. People love what they do, and they love what they read, and they love what they make. And I think, you know, spreading that love further, I think, is no bad thing. Definitely.
Definitely.
So how have you found, I mean, obviously, like you said, this is 18 months ago that you started this ongoing journey. I'm not saying you're like Frodo trying to take the ring to Mordor. does it feel like that, you know?
With some big beardy guy helping and, oh, no.
At the end, is there someone that goes, I can't carry it for you, but I can carry you.
I'll get you an eagle. Get him an eagle.
Yeah. Where are the eagles?
Exactly. Why didn't they turn up, like, you know, 3 months ago.
Hours ago.
Metal starts to disintegrate a little in the end, but...
So, amongst all of that, you've obviously been writing comics yourself, isn't it? How have you found sort of balancing the two? You know, because you've got quite a few comics on the go, haven't you? So, how has that been?
Well, I did the... Gail asked me last year at Glasgow to do the Swords of Sorrow one with... The miniseries with Deja Thoris and Iron Adler. And of course I had to say yes, because you do not turn these things down. You do not say no.
Yeah.
Gail Simone, she can be quite frightening. You know, she could easily beat me up, I'm sure. But I basically, I just thought...
That's the quote I'm using, by the way. Yeah.
Beat me up, too, I'll tell you.
But no, she's... it was really, really, really flattering to be asked. And even though I knew that I was insanely busy on Electro Comics, and Electro Comics is just something that's just like, it's ballooned into my life like an airbag. Do you know what I mean? I'm just like, God, there is nothing else left in my schedule whatsoever. But I squeezed it in, and I hope Do you know what? It was a bit of a holiday from all the project management. I actually found an appreciation for quietly sitting and typing some comics by myself and just kind of like, you know, that was actually a nice break. So, no, thoroughly enjoyed it. And
get quite
you've done some other work with, you've got a bit of a history with Dynamite. You've had some other books out with them, haven't you? Or?
We've had loads. They are, Dynamite are wonderful. They've given us all kinds of fun, wonderful things. My most favourite ones are two Sherlock Holmes books that we did for them.
Yeah,
we did the Trial of Sherlock Holmes, which was our elaborate locked room mystery. That actually, at one stage, when we're about three issues in, and we decided to write it by writing ourselves into a corner with the locked room mystery.
Cause right.
We want to be quite flash. We want people to think we're dead clever. So we'll do this unsolvable mystery. But we thought we'll do it like Agatha Christie did, where she just wrote it and then she made up like who it was at the end. So we got it's good enough for her. You know, she seemed to be quite cool on that. So we thought, well, we'll do it that way and it will be dead sort of dynamic and incredible. And so by issue three, we were actually, there was a point where we were weeping while trying to work out how on earth it was actually ever going to play out. And I was like, it's sort of a career low point, but actually a high point as well, because, you know, that is like, that is extreme comic writing when it reduces you to tears, just trying to work out how on earth you're going to fucking make it work. But that was a cool one. And then the next one we did was the Liverpool Demon, which, because we're in Liverpool and we basically got a bit fed up with everything to do with any British characters are always in London. So, yeah, Sherlock Holmes and, you know, he's in Baker Street. But everybody, it's all in London. Everybody's just like, oh, they go past the same four, like, red pillar boxes. And, you know, I just thought, no, let's see. Liverpool during that period was, like, quite sort of repulsively overcrowded with, like, millions of you know, dangerous nutters, basically. Yeah. So I thought,
now then.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought, you know, like, so yeah, we plonked him in the middle of that, and it was fantastic fun. So that was
nice. I'd say Dynamite's put some really great books out. I mean, they had a little bit of a strange name to start with for sort of TNA content, didn't they? But since then, I mean, we had Mark Lamming on a few weeks ago, and he's done some books with them, and Wilfredo Torres, and they've got some excellent pulp stuff as well. I mean, I read all their pulp books. You know, really good stuff.
Yeah, they have, and you're right. The reputation. I mean, when we started with them, they gave us we did adapted Dracula for them,
right.
And our book. When I was looking at some of their other the other stuff on the stands, it was very much kind of just a big rubbery sea of boobs, basically. And I was just like, I don't know how Dracula.
What exactly. An image!
That's the name for the title.
But I didn't know how Dracula fitted in the middle of that. I was like, it seems a bit kind of, it's a really scholarly adaptation, very dry and dusty and full of, like, you know, correctness and everything. And I thought, I don't know. But actually, you know, they've done some. They seem to basically want to do as, you know, good stuff. They have a lot of quality.
Yeah, no, they did. Yeah, they're really boundaries and some stuff. And there's people who work for them and then sort of seem to get. I know. Well, Fredo Torres has now been nicked by Mark Miller, isn't he, for a series? And
yes.
He's shot up Giovanni Timpano, who's doing The Shadows. Excellent, really excellent work.
Yeah. Me and John have a really horrible recurring thing where we do something for Dynamite and they get these artists to work with us and we do the books with them and we go, oh, they're amazing. We have to get them to do our next thing. We have to do that for our next thing. And then, of course, no, they can't because they're busy drawing like three different books from Marvel and two for DC. It's like the curse
It is the curse of Dynamite. Yeah, definitely is. Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, cool. And you've put your.
Sad, it's fine.
Sorry, mate.
Makes us a bit sad, but it's fine. It's fine.
You're a very emotional creator. That's
yeah.
Be like that.
Just weeping and nothing. You know, standard Wednesday, more than Wrecking Tower. Definitely.
And you've now you're now firmly entrenched in the Dread universe as well, aren't you? In the magazine at the moment with Storm Warning.
Yes. Yeah. With Storm Warning and our Britsit side division thing. Yeah, that has been bags of fun, actually. I think we've writing for 2000 AD doesn't really even feel like work because it's so lovely. You know, just like some people say, oh, you know, I grew up with those comics. Those comics, you know, they raised me. A lot of people that really love them, like, yeah, say that. I literally did grow up practically, like, you know, like, yeah. And so it just feels like kind of, just feels like home to me, really. So I don't know if I quite put enough. Maybe I might relax too much. I don't know, but I absolutely love doing anything.
That's a great story. Yeah, it's one. Yeah, was it number 3? I think we got in the magazine at the moment. I think the most recent issue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. So how long will that run for? Is that a long running one or?
I can't remember. Do you know the last one we did, Black Shuck? That was one of them is 9 6 pages, and the other one is 6 9 pages, and I can't remember which one's which, but yeah, you've got a few more yet. You've got at least a...
I'd say the magazine's really strong at the moment, because you've got Paul Grist in there, and Dan Abnett's writing a strip, and almost, I think I'm preferring it to the weekly at the moment. It's really strong, yeah.
It is, and traditionally, you know, not that I'm saying that 2000 AD fans, you know, can be quite, it can be quite vocal if something isn't quite right.
Yeah, but, they can be, yeah.
The magazine is absolutely, it's really good company to be amongst. And I get
any other projects coming up with them or anything else?
Tharg has asked us to do another, to come up with another Black Shuck story, so we're working on that. So, yeah, Viking werewolves. Yeah.
Brilliant.
I am in. Sorry, you just said those two words, and I thought, yeah.
Boom, Vince is in.
Boom, I am in.
Yeah, definitely. The days where we work on those sort of things, we're like, is this our job? No. Yeah, doesn't feel like it at all.
So. Not bad, is it?
And the days where you can say, oh, I'm just writing about bloodthirsty Viking werewolves. You know, yeah. How awesome is that, that you can say that?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it doesn't really work when the kids are like, can you come and do this? And you're like, no, mummy has to work, darling. Mummy has to work. Oh, what are you doing? Writing about Viking werewolves. It doesn't put them off and make them go away and kind of go, oh, poor, you know, poor mummy. So, yeah.
When my son was 6, I caught him telling his friends in the playground at school that his dad killed werewolves for a living. And I had to sort of keep it up for quite a while.
Were you like some sort of weird Blade-like character?
Yeah.
Although that's a bit dodgy, hanging outside a playground looking like Blade, isn't it?
Yeah, again. Think of the restraining orders.
No.
Yeah.
Now, I was thinking of Buffy more than Blade.
I was thinking more of John Bon Jovi and Vampires too.
Oh.
Swung around to that, yeah.
Is that a thought that happens often? I'm getting the picture that you do a lot of thinking about John Bon Jovi in Vampires 2. Is that the case?
Crocodile Dundee 4. I hope that is really good.
Yeah. How did we get to talking about vampires? Oh, okay, I remember.
Oh, yeah. I think when you were having a wee wee earlier, and you said, what?
That's weird because it didn't pick up on the mic at all. We had no idea.
It did.
Oh, a grown man just said wee wee on this podcast. Amazing. We've got a sea of boobs and a grown man saying wee wee.
Rubbery boobs.
Rubbery boobs.
Rubbery boobs. Yep. Cool. Yep. Sorry about that.
I'm going to go in a band and call it that.
We've got a lot of creators came up to me this weekend and said like that it was, we were actually giving them advice and stuff. And as you're a writer, Leah, and we've got you as a captive audience, mm-hmm. How do you write? What kind of environment do you find is best for you? Do you need to switch off everything and just sit down like with no music, or does music help you, or what kind of influences? What's best for you?
Do you know you're asking me that, and I'm sat here in our
smoking jacket and a pipe.
Smoking jacket, one of those big double slippers with the heater.
they're very comfortable, aren't they?
Really.
You were saying you were getting ready to pitch something earlier, wasn't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we've it's basically kind of frenzied panic at the moment because we've got. A 5-year-old and twin 3-year-olds, and so they, even when they're out, you're kind of scrambling to kind of get your head back to anything remotely creative. So everything is done, like, back before we had kids, we used to we basically went, well, you know, your life, that's your creative process, isn't it? So even if you're walking in the park, you're thinking of things and you're making associations, and it was that kind of lovely, lovely lie that we all tell ourselves when we're like, I'm a creative person. Being in the pub right now, this is adding to my overall creative effort, and it's going to go into something wonderful in the future. And yes, mine's a Guinness, and you know, like it's. But actually, no. If you've got a million children, which seem to be like doubling every minute, like tribbles or something, they are like, you just have to get it done. And we have bits where we kind of identify things that we think are cool and that we might like to vaguely think about in the future. And then we try and like write those down before we forget them, because we're old and we don't sleep very much. And then we kind of go over those lists and go like, what have we got? And just kind of do intensive kind of idea mining, basically. Not so much kind of waiting for them to flutter in the window, but just kind of going, is there anything of any worth whatsoever in any of this pile of stuff? And then just kind of like digging through it. And that, it does work, you know. I mean, it's less kind of full of walks in the park and pints than it used to be, but it still still works. So
I've kind of done similar, where I've written down an idea the night before and thinking, that's amazing, and then I've looked at it the next day and thinking, what the fuck was I on about? That's awful.
But yeah, when you've got books of those and you're just like, what, why, what?
Well, I guess that's where your mining comes in. You're trying to pick out the diamond in the rough.
Really, yeah, and kind of you create so much rough that it's sometimes quite difficult. But no, I'm it is a challenge. And as far as like, do I have to have music on? Do I have to like the room I'm sitting in now is a bomb site, because it's the only room in the house where you put things that you don't want the kids to get. So anything remotely kind of messy, dangerous, technical, anything like, so we just throw it all in here and then kind of.
I'm picturing like a Punisher armory right now.
yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah. And not at all a big pile of kids' pictures with macaroni stuck all over them. No, our process is. But do you know what? It will probably help when I'm not project managing an enormous sprawling digital comics project. Really, that will probably add to the amount of comics we've got written. But
when will that day be?
I have no idea, probably never. I'll be there in 50 years' time going, and that was when Electric Comics went absolutely enormous. And yeah, that
before we were beaming it into your brain.
Yeah,
it's coming, isn't it? I'm going to beam in someone's brain.
Not now, Tony, not here, not now, not like this. This is. I don't want this to be the last show, come on. We've just made it a double figures, for God's sake, man. Cool. Oh dear! So, Electric Comics. Brilliant. Yeah, where can people get this right now? You know, and find out more about it, etc., etc.
They can go to electriccomics.net and read the stuff on there. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, and you can go on the iOS App Store and just search Electric Comics, and it will come up. So, you know, go and have a look and see what you think of the comics. And then I'm off to. On Wednesday, I'm going to Mexico for the Pixelatl Digital Media Festival of Amazingness. It's all in Spanish on their website, so I haven't got a clue what I'm going for. But it's really amazing animators and amazing kind of things. So I'm doing that on Wednesday. But the 2 days before that, I have to hand in the final milestone for the whole project, which gets us our last piece of our money, and launch the creative tool and put all of the open source code up on GitHub for people. So that will be available at some point this week, and if you catch me on Twitter, I may like just be a blubbering wreck, but that'll be fine.
So there you go, folks. This was an interview with a woman that never sleeps and is highly emotional and is probably
a lot of macaroni pictures.
I might try my next issue like that.
And if you bring me chocolate buttons at conventions, then I will be your best friend forever. That's
you're going to have a lot of best friends after this. You do.
Yeah.
you're easily swayed.
Yeah.
Well, where are you doing? What conventions you got coming up? Are you doing many or?
We are doing Thought Bubble, our perennial one, because the dancing and the drinking is good crack at Thought Bubble.
It's too much, isn't it?
It is. Also, they were really nice last year and let us do a panel and all kinds. So we're going to go back and do a repeat of that, I think. We're going to do like a little review of how it's been for Electrocomics. And yeah. I think we might be there. Oh, will you? Excellent. Yeah. Well, we might be doing Caption, I think, possibly. Okay. In Coventry, I think. And we've got, as well, right, we've got Electrocomics Symposium, where we're getting a load of digital comics people all together in for a one-day thing, and they're all going to do talks and give, you know, basically reports of their projects and stuff, and then it will be all boss and amazing. So
is that open to all, or is that just...
We're going to do free ticketing on Eventbrite, but also, handily, we're going to livecast it, so everybody can just watch it. Uh-huh. From the comfort of their own dressing gown, so no problem.
When's that going to be?
That is October the 14th, I think.
Oh, okay. Cool. So,
put the date in your diaries, people. Put the date in your diaries.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've just written it down now.
Yeah, me too.
This podcast has gone interactive. Boom! Oh, well, yeah, thanks for telling us all about that.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. And be sure to check it out, people, because the books are fantastic. The four that they're on
incredible.
There.
Incredible. Yeah.
And, you know, there's so much you can do with it. Yeah, and they're free. And Tony loves things that are free, don't you?
Yeah.
I do. Yeah. Shall I do our competition?
Well, speaking of freebies. Yeah, go on, Tony. Lead the way.
Okay, so our competition that we've been running for 3 weeks now, we've got a winner. It is to win two tickets for the Nottingham Comic Con, which is on the 24th of October this year, which is you can still go to. You can still go yourself and pay if you're not tight. And the winner is Graham Healy. Hey, he's won.
Hey.
Well,
Graham. Nice one, Graham.
So you win a ticket for you and someone you want to bring, if you've got any friends. Most comic fans haven't.
Hey, this podcast is bringing people together, man.
It is. You know. Yeah. And so kids getting free. So any kids you've got to bring along. I know our last winner, whose name escapes me, Wendy, is it? She's bringing her friend and a load of kids, which is great. So it's a great day for the kids and everything. Awesome. Loads of great guests. So pop along. Nottingham Comic Con, the 24th of October. You can go to their website, www.nottinghamcomiccon.co.uk. Great day.
Brilliant. Successful competition.
Yeah. Yes, there you go. Yeah.
Hey.
Very kind of them.
Yeah. There's a few more prizes next week.
I don't know whether we've got another little prize, which will be the one that can go out to people who aren't necessarily in Nottingham.
Yeah,
because there's, you know, obviously there's a thin fan base of people. So we might run that in a couple of weeks, I think. Yeah, a bit nearer to the date. But yeah, there's one more coming. So the kind people at Nottingham Comic Con have supplied us with two other things, which are on their way.
Well, if you wanted something for a prize giveaway, I could probably find 5 copies of our signed by Alan Moore Electrocomics booklet.
That'd be brilliant. Yeah.
You'd like to give those away?
So that would be 2 to give away and we'll kick 3. The winner was Vince.
Yay!
No, that'd be really kind of you. Yeah, no, that's awesome. Yeah, brilliant. Thank you.
Oh, we've got to think of another competition now.
Yeah, another question.
Oh, God. Have we got any events coming up, Tony?
We have. There's a few events coming up. On the 9th, which is this week, we've got the launch of Mike Medaglia's book, 1 Year Wiser, and that's going to be at Gosh Comics, 1 Berwick Street, Soho, from 7 p.m. Really, really good book. Mike's a really interesting creator, so catch that. On the 11th, you've got the launch of The Rabbit for Rachel Smith, who we had on last week. That's going to be from 7 p.m., Orbital Comics. 8 Great Newport Street, London, nearest Tubes, Leicester Square, and she'll sketch in it. I know Vince got a copy this weekend.
Yeah, I got my copy before you two. Ha ha ha. Not that I'm going to show up.
And it's a really good book. We've all read it. We got Nice, which is the 19th to the 20th of September, and that is at a new venue. That's at the Bedford Blues Rugby Ground in Bedford. They've got a really good guest list. Gene Haar, Brian K. Vaughan is over from the States.
Cool.
Alan Davis, Barry Kitson, Esad Ribic, Goran Parloff, who I'm a huge fan of and is a genius, Garth Innes, who we talked about a minute ago, and Glenn Fabry, and many, many more. So all I will say is that I went to it last year. Get there before lunchtime on Sunday. I made the mistake getting there at lunchtime on Sunday, and everyone had gone to the pub. So it's a bit of a shame. But yeah, get there Saturday or Sunday morning, and you'll have a good time. There was loads of dealers there. And I think Chris Thompson, who does Pop Culture Hound, which is now Orbital in Conversation, podcast, and he's a manager at Orbital Comics, is doing the panels there, and he's a good lad, so pop along. That's it. That's for the events.
Nice. Well, shall we get on to the recommendations then, chaps?
Can I do a couple of shout-outs?
Yes, do your shout-outs, Tony. It's all about you. It's always about you. No, go ahead, mate.
Okay, mate. John Scrivens, who we talked about a few times, is a colourist, letterer and artist himself.
Ah, yeah,
he's got Kickstarter at the moment. It's go to Kickstarter and search for Little Terrors, Volume 1, and he's got a Kickstarter. I think he's got another couple of weeks left on it. He's a great guy. Alfie Gallagher, who I met this week. Congratulations, Alfie. Got married recently.
Congratulations, Alfie.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah. Emily Owens and Gavin Mitchell, who we met at Melksham, didn't we?
Melksham, yeah.
Emily, who's got the most disgusting catchphrase. We can't repeat it on air.
Gavin did message me and sort of said, what on earth is he talking about? So I let him know, and he thought it was hilarious. But
yeah, she shouted at me in the pub. Shouted at me. I thought it was
a lot of
funny.
People shout at you in a pub, Tony. That's not
get out. Yeah. Thanks. Yes, they're a really funny couple, like hilarious, and I know they listen to the show and they got engaged, so congratulations to them. We keep meaning to say this, but I know they know that we love them, but the 11 o'clock comics guys, Vince B, Jason Wood and David A. Price, for the help they certainly gave you, Vince, didn't they? They gave you some advice on.
They did indeed. Vince B, the Vince from the other side of the planet,
yeah.
He gave me lots of advice on how to do podcasts and stuff. And it obviously works okay because you people are still listening. fools.
There you go.
Thank you very much to those guys. And definitely check out the 11 o'clock comics podcast.
I mean, don't listen to our rubbish. Listen to the 11 o'clock comics. It's much better. But and I'm meeting them all. I'm at the New York Comic Con in a few, I think it's 5 weeks away now. So I'm at that. So I'm like an idiot. I've challenged them to a drinking competition with me and Lamming. So we're bound to lose that. So that should be fun. So sort of tell it to them.
Get some practicing beforehand, you'll be right. Heavy drinking.
What's that, mate?
Get some practicing beforehand.
Heavy drinking. I'm like a 12-year-old girl drinking. I'm so rubbish at it.
How many baby shams have you had tonight?
A couple. Hey, you know, I've recorded a show a bit drunk, and you know which one it is, isn't it? I bet the listeners can't guess because I sounded all.
That's why they know you're drunk, because you sounded all right on that bit.
Yeah.
So this one is where you say that you're going for a wee and that you talk about. So what happens on these drunk ones then? Is this?
I know.
Wow. Like they're tame compared to this one.
Yeah, nice.
I'm shocked.
Could you talk more about buses and old guns?
Oval scene.
I got a bit of train.
It was Horlicks. It was Horlicks.
sorry. wrong old lady drink there. Sorry.
Ovaltine are available to sponsor us if they want. We'll get some.
Oh dear. Actually, while we speak about Malcolm, obviously, like we were giving shout-outs last week, and I just got back from the convention, and I neglected to mention Sam Webster, who does Joe Cape, and Rachel Dunn, a.k.a. Jammy Scribbler from iWitch, who I met and were lovely at the weekend. But I was knackered beyond all recognition when I did last week's show. So, hello to them.
Did Jenny Gillibad tell you what happened in the toilet? Because she still won't tell me since she had an incident in the toilet.
No, somehow I will find out. I don't. Yeah. Who knows whether it will get on this podcast? But.
Yeah, it will. Yeah. I'll make something up.
You will make something up. I won't put it past you. recommendations. What does everyone want to recommend? Tony, you go first.
Okay, I'm going to recommend a book that I reviewed on Down the Tube this week. Actually, it got sent to me very kindly by John A. Short, who's the writer. It's a book called Octobriana: The Underground History. Has anyone heard of Octobriana, the character?
No.
I saw the cover you posted, which is excellent.
Yeah, it's just a sort of Amazonian lady fighting white gorillas and the Russian army. No, the Chinese army.
Amazing.
Yeah, brilliant. It's a really weird story. Czech writer, Czechoslovakian writer Peter Sadecki was a film student, and he basically made up this sort of false history of how he discovered this character. And that he got them from the in Ukraine in 1961. He met the Progressive Political Pornography Group, the PPP, which it appears to be completely made up. He made up this sort of story about how he discovered this sort of Russian sexy sci-fi character called Octobriana. And he came over to the West and continued writing some stories that are all out of copyright. There's no copyright on it. So a lot of people have sort of jumped on board and started using this character. And this book is basically a history of the use. where I had come across this character, the only one that I could remember was the fact it's in Brian Talbot's Luther Arkwright series. She's a character in that. She's a sort of Amazonian lady with a sort of Croydon facelift haircut, and we all know what that means. Yeah, come on. And a sort of red star imprinted tattooed on her forehead. And she's in both series, I think, of the Luther Arkwright series, which I'm a huge fan of. I think it's a real sort of book from my youth. And she's also played in the Big Finish version of it. Anyone know who played Luther Arkwright in the Big Finish audio play? Anyone?
No idea.
David Tennant.
Oh, yeah. Really? Oh,
wow. Okay.
Yeah, pre-Doctor Who. I did know that,
but I'd forgotten.
Yeah.
Oh, a lovely story. That's what everyone says in a pub quiz after the answer comes out.
I can recognise the fact that I've forgotten. It's just, you know, most often.
Robbie Morrison's written her into Nicolai Dante. Steve Orlando, who's a red hot DC writer at the moment and a great guy, has written to it in a miniseries in 2010, Octobriana. She pops up all over the place because basically she's copyright free and anyone can use it. And this book is a history of her appearances. She's been in a couple of short films. She's been in a series of comics. It's a sort of history of this sort of fake creator and his sort of fake background that he made up. He was a real Walter Mitty of a character who just made up like loads of stories about the history of himself as well. And I think he was a bit naughty because I think he ripped off a couple of the artists and brought some of the artwork back in the sort of late 60s, early 70s without paying them for it. And it's got the most nutty comic strip in the back as well, which is written by John Short, that involves fire-breathing night women, body morphing, cougars, sharks, and Kim Jong-un's wiener, which is quite interesting at one point.
Classic Sunday night.
Yeah. So it's like a night on the night bus, isn't it? So it's a spine book. It's Octobriana, the underground history by John, and it's from a small press company, I think, that runs out of Bournemouth, who are called Cult Creations. So if you Google Cult with a K, Creations with a C, you'll find it. It's $9.99. Well worth investing, if just for the sort of pure wackiness of it, you know. And if you're a bit of a sort of comics history fan, you know, it's well worth looking for that. Yeah, great stuff.
That's good.
Awesome. What about you, Dan?
I read a graphic novel that got recommended to me, Super God, by Warren Ellis, published by Avatar Press.
Yeah.
This was on a Tuesday morning. This is where the train story comes in. It was pissing down. I looked on Twitter and my train service had been cancelled, so I have to trudge up the other end to get this other one. So I thought, oh, this is a good time to read Super God. And it's so depressing. It's really depressing. It's basically how humanity kind of... Yeah, it makes superhumans as kind of like as the next arms race. And it all goes so badly wrong for everyone. And kind of the narrator's left at the end of the world telling you, the reader, how badly it fucked up from like day one to where he is, like sitting on the edge of the Thames. And there's just bodies and debris, burning debris, kind of like floating past him. That said, it's a great read. If you kind of lock away the razor blades and then give it a go. It spins on ideas like The $6 Million Man, stuff like that. There's even a kind of a guy that puts together a Cthulhu-like demon kind of extension of himself made out of screaming bodies and faces. It's quite horrific, and they have like a huge battle. All these cities are getting torn up. It's I would put it as a post-apocalyptic, maybe, but yeah, definitely, definitely check it out. It's worth a read. There was three in this series. It was that Black Summer, Super God, and I can't remember the third one, but I'll track that one down and give that a read too.
So wasn't it like a modern retelling of Danger Mouse? Isn't that essentially what it was?
A bit light on the old jokes, if I'm honest.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Right, where do I go after that? Well, thankfully, I chose a comedy book. The one I want to recommend is a book called Boneyard by Richard Moore. It's been out for a few years now. I think it came out sort of early 2000s, I think mid 2000s. It's black and white, sort of American small press stuff it was. And basically, it influenced a lot of my sort of the comedic timing and just the jokes and just the the way the characters sort of play out. It influenced quite a lot of my sort of stuff because he's got such a brilliant sort of comedic timing and sense of humour. And the story is basically about a guy called Michael Paris who inherits a cemetery. So he goes back to the town of Raven's Hollow and he's thinking it's going to be absolutely sort of useless and just completely pointless. But what is actually living there is a bunch of like supernatural creatures, like Abigail, who's a vampire, which turns into like a romantic interest. You got Ralph, who's a werewolf. There's Sid, who's a skeleton. There's a talking crow. There's a witch. There's a sort of a creature from the Black Lagoon, sort of like a sexy version of a creature from the Black Lagoon. And she's got a thing called Nessie, and she's got a thing for him. But her husband is called Brutus, and he's a giant Frankenstein-like monster who doesn't say much. You can get them on Amazon. I think they went through and then recolored them a few years after. You can get all. I think there's like 5 volumes. It got to a point where he had to finish the story a lot sooner than he wanted to, purely because of he was printing them through NBM, who's a very small press, I think, publisher in America. And it just came to the point where it wasn't, you know, he couldn't do it anymore because of, like, you know, money and things like that. But they're well worth checking out because the stories are hilarious. I mean, the first arc in Volume 1 is him, like, getting to know these characters. And there's a dark presence that wants to inherit this cemetery for another reason, which is hilarious in itself. But Richard Moore, before that, he wrote a couple of books. I think they're in the front of this book. I've got it to hand. Far West, which I think in America he was quite well known for. But that was very much an adults only book. Whereas Boneyard, I think, it's probably, I say PG-13. There is adult humour going through it, but it's not graphic at all. Definitely check that out. You can, like I say, you can find all the volumes on Amazon, and it just gets me laughing all the way through. And it was quite nice sort of rereading it, you know, because every time I look at it, I want to pick it up and read it again. So there you go. Cool. Boneyard by Richard Moore. Check it out on Amazon. As for recommendations from you, Leah, what do you have for us? There must be loads.
There is loads. I was trying to think what to recommend, but I've got a sort of slight ulterior motive in this one, because last year I got to teach a graphic novel course. It was the Arvon course that Brian Talbot teaches, and he got me in to be the co-tutor. And two of my pupils, who even though they are grown-ups, I think of as, like, you know, they're basically, I'm just adopting them. That's my that's my main plan. But two of them have actually came out, they've got comics out, so I thought I'd give them a little plug. One of them is Akibaba, Gallipoli 1915, which is another World War I book about the disastrous campaign of in Gallipoli. And it's a guy called Paul Bristow has written it, and it's for Magic Torch Press, which is another teeny weeny little publisher. But it's fantastic. One of the things I should teach at the next time I do it is actually kind of taking ownership of your work, because he doesn't even give himself a writing credit on it. He just says he's assembled the documents and the facts. So what he's done is he's intercut a page of the kind of the official line of the of what was happening at that stage, so the official reports and the what was happening, and then contemporary documents from the time, from the men in the field, their letters home, or, you know, kind of more actual kind of honest opinion of what was going on. And he just kind of puts them next to each other, and the art, which is actually beautiful, is Andy Lee has done that, and it's really lovely. I didn't know, because you know, war stuff is it can be a bit heavy-handed sometimes, or it can be, and the fact that he's literally just paired it back to the accounts. He doesn't even, there's no kind of dramatization either of it, apart from what you can see. It's just the kind of the counterpoint between the two things is just it's really interesting, and I'm so proud I could burst. So yes, the other one is Rick, which is a little teeny weeny zine that he's putting out himself, and it's by Gordon Shaw, and it's on Facebook, I think, oh my god, he's going to hate me now because I can't even remember what his web address is. Let me see. But anyway, it's another one for making me cry, because that's basically the only thing that I require in a comic. Is it a comic? Yes. Does it make me cry? Yes. Okay, I'll buy it then. But Rick is about... Gordon revealed to me in our seminar that we had on this week of teaching. He said, we've been having good crack all week, and he, you know, lovely fella, been chatting at dinner times and everything, but we hadn't had a lot of time to spend together. So he comes in for his seminar, and I was like, oh, so what's yours about then? Thinking, like, you know, it's, you know, going to be this, you know, the range of projects, I have to say, on one of those courses is quite extraordinary. So, you know, people come into the seminars and you really have to be on your toes to kind of go, like, what is it that they're going to need help with? You know, it was quite a wide variety of things. But it turns out Gordon says, oh, actually, I have a brain tumour and it's inoperable. And I've decided to do this project whereby I get all my friends and family to give me a piece of writing or an artifact or something that is their like response to that.
Wow.
And so I was absolutely floored and just sat there like with my jaw open for a while. And he said, and he's gonna draw it up as comics, and he's gonna, you know, bring it out in these little installments. And all he wanted help with really was sort of like how to balance it, you know, how to sort of spread these artifacts out. The first one is out, and it's lovely. It's lovely. And do you know what? It could be mawkish, maudlin, really upsetting. All it comes across as is a really wonderful chance for him and all of his friends and family to talk about something which in, I think, most of our, you know, circles would be incredibly awkward, really like difficult, upsetting. You don't really want to sit down with everybody that you know and love and go, well, this whole my death thing is going to be a bit awful, isn't it? You know, like it's not something you can kind
incredible,
of
isn't it?
But yeah. he's done that, and he's allowed them to do something they're collaborating on this like little work of art that allows them all to kind of talk about it, deal with it, prepare for it, whatever you want, but also just to kind of the anecdotes are so weird and hilarious because people are people, you know. It's not just a lot of people going, hell, I remember when we first met. It was actually just kind of the weird nonsense that happens between people, and they go, oh, the thing I'll remember you for is like, and like one of them is a haiku, one of them is just like the weird rambling accounts, that conversations that you have when you're pissed and you're just kind of like, you know, exploring. And it is just, it's lovely. And I'm so proud because, you know, he had kind of the germ of an idea. And I was just like, do this now, quick, draw it. I want to read it. Stop talking about it and crack on because I want to read it. And now I actually can. And he sent me a copy. So I'm yes. If you have a look on Facebook, awesome. I think... I haven't managed to because my phone is rubbish because
I'm... Well, I mean, with every show, I put links for everything.
Okay,
so,
well,
yeah,
throw
so,
a link in for that.
Yeah.
Excellent.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. Both sound definitely. Amazing, actually.
Yeah.
Blimey. Is there anything else you would like to recommend?
Quite a heavy vibe for the show, though, isn't it?
Well,
like, Leah, she was a great laugh. We were all like, had to go into counselling. Yeah.
Especially after Dan's recommendation just then as well.
I know, yeah.
That's pretty bleak.
Dan on a train, really depressed.
Yeah. Daily occurrence.
Is either that or me on a bus in a giant shoe. Jesus.
You're providing everything that people are going to want from a comics podcast, really.
Yeah.
To be honest, they'll have to be pretty picky.
Yeah.
People listen to this and feel better about themselves because they just think, at least I'm not them.
Yeah. I feel a bit depressed now.
The kernel of truth to that, methinks.
Dan will cheer us up by talking about BDSM again.
I really have to go back over and listen to these. I can tell. Is this in conjunction with the Horlicks or the weeing? Do I not want to ask that?
Compared BDSM to colouring books, that was quite good.
Yeah,
my favourite moments.
What, like a sort of, you know...
It's along the lines of I didn't understand colouring books. Pretty much like BDSM.
Oh, so. Right. Okay. Not like, what would you rather do for an afternoon if it's raining? But they've both got their, like...
That'd be pretty desperate choices if someone said that.
Put the kettle on. I'll get your leather on. Yeah. Like that.
Put the kettle on, make some Horlicks, and let's get crazy.
There's a niche in the market for a BDSM colouring book, I'm sure, that there is, isn't
it? Yeah, you'd run out of reds and blacks, wouldn't you, quite quickly, I think.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, it's an idea, though. Let's get on that. Vince, get on that. I've copyrighted that now. That's mine.
I was so close to keeping this show, like, on the rails. It almost made it. I thought, well, the 10th show, maybe this time, but no.
No, it's going to go worse.
And it's the guest's fault.
Hey, I'm an innocent party in all this. I'm just, you know, just popping in to say hello. It's nothing to do with me.
Thank you very much for joining us.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. Brilliant.
And I hope you folks out there have enjoyed this episode. As always, there's lots of different ways you can tell us what you thought of Dan's colouring books or Horlicks or things like that. You can email
us. Nothing to do with me. I didn't bring that up.
Hey, look. If I'm going down, you're going down with me. Right, Butcher?
Next week it's sandwich paste. That catalogue you get from the Aldi that has quite cheap drills in it.
Scandinavian for value. Yeah.
Well, I'll be listening. Hey! Even if nobody else is.
Next week's show is going to be brilliant. So there's several different ways you can tell us about this show. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if you've got anything, any events, any books, anything you want us to look at, it's tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. As you can tell, that's Tony's Awesome Comics email, isn't it? Mm. On the Twitter, we are @theawesomepod. At Facebook, we are facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, and we'll probably be, God knows what we'll be posting up on that page this week. We like to get a bit interactive, so and you'll be able to find links to Electric Comics, etc. on there, and on the page at awesomecomics.podbean.com, where you can get all the latest episodes, and there's plenty of good episodes that Leia will now be checking out. Right. Where can they find us on Twitter, folks? Tony, you can go first.
Okay, thank you. I'm
on... that was the most, like, that's the nicest you've been in 10 episodes. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Jesus.
This is coming back to haunt me, isn't it? Yeah. I'm on Twitter, Ezohyz, which is Ezohyz, or you can find me in the review section at Down the Tubes.
Brilliant. Dan?
On Twitter, it's @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
And you really should, because he's got some exciting. He's got some exciting stuff coming up. You can catch me at Jester Diablo. And Leah, where can they find you?
I feel like I'm letting you all down now. I'm just Leah Moore, but you know, it's Leah's quite hard to spell, I suppose. It's LEAHMWORE if people need any. It's just Leah Moore. Sorry. Or at Electric Comics as well?
Yes. Cool. Definitely follow that all up. And check out the Electric Comics website.
Definitely,
as well.
Yeah.
Watch this space. There's plenty of exciting stuff to come. So, as always, folks, thanks for listening. Hope you have a great week. Tune in next week because we've got another exciting guest coming up. And from Dan, Tony, Leah, and myself, have a great week and stay awesome.
See ya.
Bye.